Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the tyranny of experts right after this. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership and private property and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights. And permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by government institutions like OSHA and the EPA? And the state tax commissioner, zoning and planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that we have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. And let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about this thing called private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one. It's the number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. You can stream it or download it. That's georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page. All right, we've been talking about the tyranny of experts, and I want to start today by telling you a story about what happens in our ready-made society. If you think about your birth and your growth, and you're a Catholic, and the question arises, well, why are you a Catholic? Because you were born into a Catholic family. Now, you could be an exception. You could have grown up, and it happens, it's rare, but it happens. You could grow up, and you could be 35 years old and get an epiphany and go out and convert to Roman Catholicism, but it's very unlikely that that's going to happen. You could be a Roman Catholic, and then you could get an epiphany, and you could convert to Protestantism, but that's not very likely to happen. That isn't normally the way people pick up their religion. You learned your religion from mom and dad, from the time you were a child. You went to church every Sunday, and then one day you woke up, looked around, and somebody said, well, you're a Catholic. You're a Baptist. Now, the same thing is true out here in the real world. You woke up one day, and somebody was in public school telling you about history. It wasn't that you were at Valley Forge. It wasn't that you experienced these historical events. These are events that transpired years and years ago. Hell, they were even done before you were born. And you read about them in a book, and somebody tells you this is important for you to learn, and we want you to learn about these historical events. So when you're in Alabama and you learn about the Civil War, you get a different story than you get when you're in New York studying the Civil War. And that's because Alabama and New York were on opposite sides. And so the same thing is true with religion. You know, if you're a Catholic, you've been told that all those Protestants over there are going to hell and they're all bad people. If you're a Protestant, you've been told all those Catholics are going to hell and they're all bad people. The truth of the matter is, if you stop and think about it for a minute, most of those Catholics that you know, that you work with on the job, are pretty good guys, aren't they? I mean, I never had any complaints about the guys I work with, you know, and they're Catholics and Protestants. And one guy goes to one church, another guy goes to another church. Well, then you take a look at their politics, and one guy's voting for Barack Obama, and the other guy's voting for, for a Republican. And then some third guy, he's over here voting for a libertarian. And you say, what in the hell is a libertarian? Now, the experts that you've been dealing with here are mom and dad. They're the experts on religion, and they determined for you what religion, what politics, and so on that you should follow. And people are passionate about their religion and politics, very passionate. In fact, it isn't satisfactory in a political arena for us to listen to two guys tell us their positions on a political matter. And then we all go down to the polling place, and then in secret we cast our vote, and then we count those votes to find out, well, what did the majority of people think about these two positions? And see, that's the ideal. That's what we're taught in school. That isn't the way that works. The way it really works is, behind the scenes, there are people who are very passionate about one side or the other, and they are registering people that are dead, buried in cemeteries. They are registering people that are illegal aliens. They are surreptitiously stuffing ballots in the ballot box. They are programming computers to affect the end result of the election. They're not satisfied with coming to a conclusion based upon, we don't know how the people are going to vote, so let's wait and see. They're actively trying to affect the outcome of how the people are going to vote. It's dishonest, it's unethical, but it's very common. It's the way the elections are run. Now, when we carry this through throughout life, we find that the experts, you know, whoever or whatever these experts are, whether they're lawyers or politicians or economists, they have a worldview. They have a view of what they see, what they believe, and they want you to believe what they believe. Now, that's very natural and normal. I'm on the air and I'm telling you a story, and I want you to believe what I believe. The distinction now between the paid professionals and the law hour is, I'm going to present the information to you, and then I'm going to back off. I'm not going to stuff the ballot box. I'm not going to tell you, now you should vote for this guy or that guy. I don't know who the guy is that you ought to vote for. I don't know what church you ought to go to. I don't know what lawyer you should listen to. I don't know what preacher that, you know, you should give your attention to. Those are decisions that individuals have to make. And I contend that before you make that decision, you should have all the relevant facts. That the whole story should be presented to you. And then you should mull that story over. And maybe you're going to make the wrong decision and vote for the wrong guy. Join the wrong church. Hire the wrong lawyer. And it's going to cost you a lot of money, and it's going to be very deleterious to you. But that's your choice in life, and after all, that's what freedom is all about. Freedom is about your right to choose what you want to choose. And in the aggregate, if you and 50,000 other people decide that you want this guy to represent you in Washington, D.C., well, and that's the decision that 26,000 of you made versus 24,000 on the other side. You know, that's the way the game is supposed to be played. Now, it's not being played that way, but that's the way it's supposed to be played. Now, that being the case, you and I, sitting here on the world scene, we get caught up in the politics and the religions and the intrigues. You know, the war in Afghanistan affects me here in Isabella, Missouri, just like it affects you in New York City or Los Angeles. I end up paying for that, just like you do. I really didn't want to pay for that, and I really didn't want to go to war in Afghanistan, but the powers that be, the experts, decided that that's what needed to be done, and so they went ahead and did it. And they didn't consult the majority of Americans to find out if we wanted to go to war. They said, this is what needs to be done, and we're going to go do it, and you voted us in, and so therefore, for the next 4 years, is what you're stuck with. Then in 2004, we ratified George Bush's war in Iraq. Remember? We voted him back in. So we don't have anything to complain about in the war in Iraq or the war in Afghanistan. I mean, we voted these people into office, and then we re-voted them into office. Kind of reminds me of a story. There was a guy came into class here, and he said, the American people have become sheeple, and they have been taken advantage of by the government, and they're being taxed, referring to the income tax, against their will and over their objection. And then I said, well, what makes you say that? And he came up with four or five lame arguments about the way he saw the income tax. Now, he's opposed to the income tax, and I'm not. I know I'm called a tax protester, you know, but I'm not. I'm not protesting any taxes. I'm not trying to abolish the IRS or trying to abolish the Federal Reserve or anything else. But I'm called a tax protester, and of course I teach a class on tax and status, and this guy, you know, he's opposed to the income tax, and he's telling me what his beliefs are concerning this income tax. And I said, now, the people of America voted the income tax in, and they want the income tax, and they have consistently supported the income tax from its inception to the present time. And he looked at me like I was suffering from the terminal stupids, and he said, well, what makes you say that? And I said, well, number one, the income tax was enacted on Christmas Eve, December the 23rd, 1913, and it was done with a Democratic administration. Woodrow Wilson signed it into law. So in 1916, the people of America had an opportunity to vote Woodrow Wilson out of office and express their displeasure over the income tax, and they didn't. They reelected him to office. Then in 1920, Warren G. Harding was elected president, and with Republican majorities, they did not repeal the income tax. So the Congress and the president, through the 1920s, three Republican administrations, did not repeal it. Then Franklin Roosevelt came to office in 1933. He expanded this socialistic program, and he included Social Security, and the people loved it, and voted him into office four times in a row. And then voted in his successor, Harry Truman, once in 1948. And then from that point on, the Congress and the president have supported the income tax. The people have never complained about it. It is true there are some dissidents out here, but nowhere near a majority. Now, the real test came in 1992 with a guy by the name of Steve Forbes. Did it twice, 92 and 96. And he was seeking the Republican nomination for president. Steve Forbes now is the editor of Forbes magazine. And he's not a lightweight, and he's a Republican, and he's, you know, fairly conservative. And he said, what we need to do is to abolish the income tax and put in a flat tax. Now, tithing is a flat tax. Everybody pays the same. The income tax is a heavy progressive tax. It's the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for a heavy progressive income tax. The more you make, the more we tax. So the tithing system taxes everybody 10%. So if you're a Donald Trump and you make $1 million, you pay $100,000. And if you're a plumber and you make $50,000, you pay five. Donald Trump pays, he pays 20 times more than you do because he made 20 times more money than you did. Now, the way the system is set up, Donald Trump makes $1 million, we tax him 40%. That means he has to pay $400,000. You're a plumber. And then you make $50,000, we tax you 10%, you pay $5,000. So that's called the heavy progressive income tax. And the people love that. The people actually believe that the more money you make, the more tax you should pay. They have bought into that. The experts, the teachers in your schools and in your colleges and your mom and dad and the people around you. Maybe you came to that conclusion on your own, but the experts told you that that's the right way to do it. Now, your creator, the creator of the universe, God Almighty himself said, no, that isn't the right way to do that. He said the flat tax is correct. Heavy progressive is wrong. Now, in 1992, the people of America had an opportunity to make a choice, and they did. They chose George Bush, who was at that time the president, to be their standard bearer, and Bill Clinton on the other side. And both of those guys supported the income tax, the status quo, the way it is. And Bill Clinton was elected. 1996, Forbes comes back and says, let's rethink this income tax. The people of America nominated Bob Dole. So it was Dole and Clinton. Both of them agree that the income tax, heavy progressive, communist, plank number two, is the program we want to follow. These are the experts, and these are the experts that we followed. Now, I don't know if that's the right decision or not. I'm not here to argue about the income tax and heavy progressive. I mean, after all, if the people of America, if the majority of people want a heavy progressive income tax and voted in, you know, who am I to come along in the minority and say that's wrong and I'm going to take that away from you? I don't want to do that. I think that if the people of America want a heavy progressive income tax, I'd have one. Stuck up their hind end sideways, if that's what it takes. So, you know, if you think I'm trying to abolish the income tax or IRS or something like that, perish the thought. I'm not into that program at all. But I wanted to expose what's going on so that you can make better, more informed decisions for yourself. Now, I took a look at this income tax years ago, and I said, I don't want to participate in this thing. I want to pay a flat tax. I want to tithe. I don't want to participate in this heavy progressive income tax communist program, so I opted out. And there is an option out. You can opt out of this. You can obey God and keep his commandments if you so desire. And it's prescribed in the First Amendment to our Constitution, which deals with religious free exercise. I mean, if you want to practice the Ten Commandments, as opposed to practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, it's called religious free exercise, and you got a right to do that. Your Constitution permits it, and God Almighty demands it. Your Creator didn't ask you if it was a good idea and if you'd like to go along with it. He never left it for you to decide. He told you plainly, here's right, here's wrong, here's what I'm telling you to do. But what you had a choice in the matter was, am I going to follow God's advice or not? Now, God is an expert. I would contend with you that the creator of the universe is a pretty good expert. He's got his opinions and his take on the heavy progressive income tax and on fiat paper currency versus gold and silver. He has his opinions concerning right to life and right to choose. And in case you didn't know it, God, the creator of the universe, is opposed to abortion and is pro-life. I don't know if you knew that or understood that or not, but the creator of the universe is anti-abortion and he is pro-life. And Genesis 9 verse 1 is where he tells you that. Genesis chapter 9 verse 1, just a very short, plain statement, tells you the answer to the riddle. Now, you have the choice as to whether or not you want to practice abortion. I'm not here to tell you not to. I don't care what you do. But I think that you should be informed that your creator told you that you ought not to be doing that. And he backs that up. He's got two chapters here. Let me share them with you. They're Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. They're called the penal clause chapters in Scripture. Penal clause. See, when you have a contract, you have to have a penal clause, otherwise you don't have a contract. A penal clause is, if you don't do what this contract requires, then we're going to exact a penalty. And so that penalty that's being exacted here in the world today, the global financial crisis, is a penalty that's coming down on our heads because we didn't practice just weights and balances. We practiced theft in violation of thou shalt not steal. We practiced fiat currency in place of you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And now there's a natural result or penalty that comes from it. We listened to the experts. But there was another expert out there to listen to. And God is an expert, and I would contend. And he gave us his opinion. He gave us his advice, and we rejected it. And we took the advice of Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, the Republicans and Democrats. Those are the experts that we listened to and that we followed. And we got a result that came from that. So as opposed to being victims, I would suggest to you that you and I aren't victims. You know, we knew what we were doing when we went to the polls and voted for these clowns, didn't we? Man, you're not claiming today now that you were mentally disturbed on election day back in 1996 or 1992 now, were you? So if you weren't mentally disturbed, you went in there and you voted and got a result from it, you know. Bill Clinton gave us the World Trade Organization and NAFTA. And remember the little guy from Houston, you know, Ross Perot, the little guy whose ears kind of stick out, you know, he said, that's a god-awful mistake. Now, he said, you know, if you do that, you're going to get a result, and you're going to offshore and outsource all these jobs, and so now you got all your, I think it's about 10 million now, about 10 million jobs have been shipped over to China and Pakistan and, well, you know, Philippines and God knows where. In fact, people are moving out of Silicon Valley in California and going to India. They're giving up $60,000 a year jobs in Silicon Valley and taking jobs for $10,000 a year in New Delhi, India. And they say they can live better in India on $10,000 a year than they can live in California on $60,000. Now, you know, if that's the conclusion that you wanted, you got it, because the experts gave it to you. You followed the advice of the experts on world trade. And as a result of that, there's a result. All right. So this fellow that wrote this article here that we've been talking about, I thought I'd start off there and tell you about this little story. And as a result of that, you know, we get a result listening to these experts. Now I'm going to tell you one more quick story here. I'm a kid. I'm about 15 years old. And I had $5,000 in the bank. Now this is 1954. 1954, $5,000, boys and girls, was like $50,000 today. So just imagine, you know, you're 15 years old and you got 50 grand in the bank. Because that's the exchange rate in today's dollars. Now, I was a paper boy. I worked for a farmer, and I had an FFA project. And I was making about $250 a month, and I had been for about 2 or 3 years. And I saved nearly all of it, and I put it in the bank. I had a Bank of America, 2.5% interest, Henderson Center branch, Eureka, California, $5,000. Mr. Harvey, an expert, after all, he was a businessman, farmer, and he said to me, now, little Georgie, you need credit. You need to have a credit standing, and credit means that you can go to the bank and borrow money. Now, a kid that's got $5,000 in the bank, why does he need to borrow money? He's already got the money. If he got the money, why do you need to borrow it? And in the Bible, God says, you shall lend but not borrow. And you'll see that in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Now, the experts tell you that you need credit. So Americans, and I would imagine any of you people listening to me around the world, have already been propagandized by the experts and told that you need credit. I disagree with that, and so does God. God, our Creator, said you don't need credit. What you need is property. What you want is property. You want wealth. And then what do you need to borrow for? I mean, why does Donald Trump need to go to the bank and borrow money? He's already got it. Now, why does Bill Gates need to go borrow money? Why does he need good credit? He's got $37 billion. I'll bet you that Bill Gates has a AAA credit rating, though, and I'll bet you he borrows money, and I bet you he pays interest. That's what I did. It doesn't make any sense. It's actually subversive, but we were taught to do this, and we were taught at an early age. Now, I'm just a kid, 15 years old, and I'm out working, and I'm saving my money. That's what my dad said, save your money. That's what Mr. Harvey said, save your money. And I did. I saved it. I put it in the bank. Now, I've got this $5,000 in the bank. Now, Mr. Harvey says you got to develop credit. How do you do that? You go to the bank and you borrow money, and then you pay it back. Now, remember, I'm 15 years old. I don't have any credit history. I've never borrowed any money, never paid any back. And so you got to start somewhere. So Mr. Harvey took me down to the bank, introduced me to the banker. And Mr. Harvey was a Mason, and I'm sure that the banker was a Mason. Banker welcomed me in, shook my hand, sat me down, and we chit-chatted a little bit. And Mr. Harvey explained that I was young and just getting started in life, and I needed to establish credit. And the banker said, well done, son. He's feeding my ego. Mr. Harvey told him that I'd saved some money, and I had money in the bank right there. And he said, how much money do you want to borrow? And Mr. Harvey had already coached me, and I said, $1,000, sir. Okay, you want to borrow $1,000? And the banker said, what do you have for collateral? And I said, well, I have my bank account. And then he said, you don't have any real estate, and you don't have any houses, and okay, but you do have cash in the bank. He said, fine. He said, do you have your passbook with you today? And I did, and so I handed it over to him, and he looked at it, and he said, well, that's great, $5,000 in the bank. And so he said, this will serve as collateral. So he drew up the papers, and I borrowed $1,000. The payments were $89 a month. The interest rate was 6%. So we borrow $1,000. We pay $89 a month for 12 months at 6% interest, and that pays back the $1,000 plus $60 interest, $1,060, simple interest. Pretty straightforward deal, right? Okay. Now, what's the collateral? I have to give him my passbook. That's right. Now, when I want to deposit money in the bank, I have to go over to my banker, get my passbook. He comes over with me. We make my deposit. He keeps the passbook. So my bank account goes up from $5,000 to $5,100, $5,200, $5,300. In fact, I had deposited more than the $1,000 that I was paying back. What did I do with the $1,000? I didn't have any use for it and didn't need it. So after I borrowed the money, I deposited it back in my account. So I got $5,000, borrowed $1,000, I got $6,000, but I'm paying $89 a month. Now, I'm also depositing my savings in the bank. Every month, you know, I get paid off of my FFA project. I get paid for my labor. I get paid for my paper route, and I'm depositing my money in the bank. This is a guardian ward relationship, which is being created by experts, and I'm being manipulated. I didn't need to borrow the money. This gives rise to this old adage, banks lend money to people that don't need it, and people that need it, they won't lend to. I didn't need the money. I'm just borrowing the money to develop a line of credit, which I did. And when I got through paying the $1,000 back, I had credit at Bank of America. Bank of America said, this guy Gordon's good. He's got collateral. I bought an airplane, bought it on credit, paid interest. I used the airplane as collateral. I'm not deaf, dumb, and blind. I know how to use interest and usury. But you see, had I been instructed by another expert, God, he would have said, this is crazy. This is nonsense. It's against the law for you to borrow money on interest. Not against the law to borrow the money. It's against the law to pay interest. I didn't know that. The experts told me, don't listen to God. Listen to us. We're the experts. I did. So I paid interest. I learned how to pay this interest and usury. And it came to a no good end. In the final analysis, after looking back over 60 years of or 55 years of business experience, I can tell you, I never had a good experience paying interest and usury. It always came out bad for me. Came out good for the bank, came out good for the government, came out bad for me. So I thought I would pass that little story on to you, because the experts in almost every case are lying to you. Not in every case, but almost every case. They're lying to you for their own personal profit. It's for the profit of Bank of America. Now, you can see what the big banks have done. They have led the world into a global financial crisis. They own all of the houses, just like the bank. When they loaned me the $1,000, created a guardian ward relationship, they owned my savings account. Now the bank has my $5,000 and I can't take it out. So I borrowed $1,000 and they got $5 back so that they were guaranteed for one whole year that they'd have that $5,000 left in there. They paid me the 2.5%. So they lent it to me, they lent me my own money for 6% and paid me 2.5%. Huh? Does this make sense? Okay, but this is what the experts are teaching us to do. And you know, when we think about it, it's illogical. It's stupid. It's nonsensical. But we do it because we've been taught and trained to do it by mom and dad and by good old Mr. Harvey and by the preacher in the church and by the teachers in the school. They're all teaching us to do this. They're teaching us to rely upon these experts. And it's a part of what we call the world system. But the world system's backward, it's upside down, and it is in exact opposition to the 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments that God gave us in the Scripture. All right, so with that much in mind, let me give you your mid-course correction here and remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review that were sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org, click on the archives page, and download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org, and go to the archives page. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about experts, and these experts create a tyranny. We listen to our lawyers. We listen to our doctors. Sometimes they're telling us the truth. Sometimes they're lying to us, and sometimes they don't know the difference between the two. But it's not a guarantee that we've got all the answers, and that's the point of this series of programs. These guys don't have the answers. Don't now, never did, and never will. Now, there is a source of information that does have concrete answers. In the last program, we're talking about what's the problem. The problem's death. You see, you're afraid of dying. You're going to die. And the wages of sin is death, and it's appointed to all men to die once. You're going to die once. Now, you don't have to die twice, but you might. You know, you could. But we're all going to die once. And we're trying to avoid that. As best we can, we're trying to avoid that. And so the experts then, they cue in on our fear. Fear. Now write this down. This is important. Vanity, number one. You're motivated by vanity. You are a very vain person. Even if you're an introvert and you're shy, you're full of vanity. You're full of jealousy. You're jealous. There's other people that have things that you want. You're filled with lust. Lust is another motivator of human nature. Vanity, jealousy, lust. You have desires that you want to fulfill. And you're full of greed. G-R-E-E-D. Just greedy. You know, you can have $1,000 and you want another one. You want 2,000. If you had 2,000, you'd want 4. If you had 4, you'd want 8. Bill Gates is not satisfied with $37 billion. He wants another 37 on top of that. He couldn't spend the 37 that he's got now. But he wants another 37. We're all like that. So don't take that as a put down. I'm just pointing out that the last one over here is fear. F-E-A-R, fear. And this is what motivates you to action. Vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. These are the five motivators of human nature. We've all got it. And if you can't control your five motivators, you can rest assured that there's an expert out there somewhere that will control it for you to his advantage. He's going to pull your strings like a puppet. Whether he's a salesman who's going to sell you a car that you don't need, can't use, shouldn't have, and probably should avoid. Now, these experts over here, they're selling something to us. They're selling us global warming. And the experts are all telling us, hey, this global warming is bad for you, and you've got to concentrate on this CO2. It's crazy. CO2, you know, this whole argument. If they would have picked any other gas, they might have been making some sense. But see, CO2 is a necessary gas in the atmosphere. If you could eliminate all of the CO2 in the world, all of the vegetation would die, which then would catapult all life forms into dying. Have to have CO2. And in order for us to have carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, we have volcanoes. The reason these volcanoes are out here and active and working is because the Creator needed from time to time to put CO2 into the atmosphere to feed the plants. Now let me show you why this global warming is false. The theory is that people, you and I, man, burning gasoline in our automobiles is making CO2. That burning coal in our power plants is making CO2 and putting it into the atmosphere. This CO2 in the atmosphere is causing global warming, and the ice caps are melting, and the world's going to be flooded. And we've got to take action and do something about that. And most of the people in the world have now been persuaded that that scenario is true and that we need to take action. It's not true. The experts are lying to you. And they've got a motivation. It's tax. They want to raise taxes. They've got a money motivation here. Now let me show you why it's false. If you took all of the CO2 that mankind has created over the last million years, you know, just take the evolutionary philosophers and go back to the first man who learned how to make a fire and started putting CO2 into the atmosphere to today, right now as I speak. All of that CO2 in a million years, with all the automobiles and all the power plants and all the CO2 that mankind has ever created, would not amount to as much CO2 as Mount Pinatubo, that volcano in the Philippines, put into the atmosphere in 1 year. That's right. A volcano, when it erupts, puts CO2 into the atmosphere. And a good volcanic eruption will put as much CO2 into the atmosphere in 1 year, 365 days, as all the CO2 generated by mankind in his entire history. Can you see how phony this CO2 argument is? Now, if that statement's true, now why don't you go online and take a look at CO2 and volcanoes and how much volcanic CO2 comes out of a volcano in 1 year. You can do it right on the internet. You don't have to believe me. I didn't ask you to. Then go check it out for yourself. Now, here's the reason that the experts are convincing us that we need to have a concentrated effort to limit mankind's CO2 input into the atmosphere. They dreamed it up because they want to tax CO2. The United Nations needs to have a source of revenue for this New World Order government that they're putting into operation. So they want the power companies. They don't want to come to you and say, we're going to tax you directly, because that makes you mad. If governments came to you and said, we're going to tax you on the amount of CO2 you're putting in the atmosphere, you'd come unhinged and vote for the other party. And now everybody knows that. So what they're going to do is they're going to tax the power companies for the CO2 that they're putting into the atmosphere. The power companies, they don't care, because they're just going to raise your electric rates. This is why you hear the advertisements say, this party is trying to raise your electric rates. You're going to double them. And that's what the estimates are. For openers, it's going to double your electric rate. So let's suppose, if you're like me, my electric bill every month is about $250. So my electric bill is going to go up to $500. It doesn't have anything to do with eliminating CO2. Nobody's going to eliminate any CO2. The power plants are going to keep right on putting the CO2 into the atmosphere, but they're going to pay a tax for doing that. and they're going to collect the tax from us. So when your power bill doubles, it isn't that the power company is going to get the money. They're just collecting the money for the government. They'll pay it over to the government. That's the way that game is played. Now, that's what the experts are selling us. Is that what you want to buy? If that's what you want to buy, get on board. Hell, you're well on the way. If that isn't what you want to buy, well, maybe you want to take some other course of action. Let me bring in the issue of smoking here. And remember this article that we're covering here in this series of programs written by Morris E. Chaffetz, M.D. He takes on the issue of smoking here. He says, I think the smoking health issue illustrates how the experts operate. First of all, the anti-smoking advocates attack the advertising of tobacco products. They firmly state, without any credible evidence, that advertisements make people take up smoking. So in the mind of the anti-smoking advocates, people are like dogs who respond mindlessly to suggestion. It does not take much thinking to see how much and how such a conclusion comes to the fore, that people are being manipulated into unhealthy behavior, and that would rile the public. And so in the case of children, many people feel guilty enough. To start with, the public health advocates, with the help of some children who are artful at manipulation all by themselves, make it sound like the hungry for the dollar standard practice and free enterprise business people hook children and others on smoking through advertising. Does advertising cause people to smoke? Well, can you prove that? What evidence do you have? Now, it may be. I started smoking when I was about 12 years old. My mother and father both smoked. My friends smoked. And so I started smoking. I can't honestly say that any advertising caused me to smoke. And I started smoking the brand of cigarettes that my dad smoked. And my mother smoked Herbert Tarrington and my dad smoked Lucky Strikes. I think that my dad's smoking Lucky Strikes influenced me to smoke Lucky Strikes. And I think that my mother's smoking Herbert Tarrington made me smoke Herbert Tarrington because they were available and I could filch those. So they bought by the carton, so they'd never miss a pack of cigarettes, you know. That's how I got started. But I didn't go out and start smoking because I heard the Lucky Strike ads or the Joe Camel ads. Now, some people might, but I didn't. So let me tell you about my smoking history. And he starts off and he says, I was a pipe smoker, and while in college and medical school, because it was fashionable to smoke a pipe. And as a psychiatrist, smoking a pipe helped me to control my tendency to talk too much. I used my pipe to keep my mouth shut so I could listen to my patients. When I became a mover and shaker in government, pipe smoking was impossible. I had to move quickly and often. Meetings, gatherings, and all of the hullabaloo that comes with power did not permit the leisure of pipe and pipe smoking. So I turned to cigarettes, to three packs a day, as a matter of fact. So as I approached the end of my tenure at the NIAAA, that's the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, many of my sons bet me $20 that I could not go 1 year without smoking. From the day I left office, I did not smoke for 1 year. I collected the 20 bucks that my son owed me, and then I went right back to cigarette smoking, but not to two or three packs a day. People who were smokers and could not quit told me that I must not have been addicted. In other words, if the facts don't fit a preconceived model, you don't throw out the model, you disregard the facts that threaten the model. And that's the way these experts work. The global warming, the global warming story over here has run into a snag. You see, Al Gore, who's one of the movers and shakers on global warming, has been discovered as being a fraud. Some scientists who were in on it sent some emails back and forth, and then their emails became public knowledge, and they were published. And these people don't believe that carbon dioxide threatens the world. But they're telling us that it does, because they're the experts. And their motive isn't because they're concerned about global warming. Their concern is about, can they persuade people that global warming is a real threat so that we can enact this legislation so that we can collect these taxes? See, these taxes are estimated, these global warming taxes are estimated at about $1 trillion a year. These people are into this for big money. Al Gore is not selling global warming for peanuts. He's trying to sell a $1 trillion tax increase, a worldwide tax on carbon dioxide emissions, which is going to amount to $1 trillion a year. When he left office back in 2000, he had a few million dollars. Today it's over $100 million. He's been paid very well for his services. He gave up the presidency, took up an advocate's position on global warming, and he has been paid, and he's written books, and he's just making money hand over fist. That's his job. Now, how does that benefit you and me? It doesn't. It doesn't benefit us at all. Us little guys down here. It benefits the experts. The experts are getting paid. Scientists who lie about global warming, they get paid for that. They're dishonest, they're unethical, but they're well paid. Now, in talking about an advocate's position here against anti-smoking, now, I used to smoke for years, and I'm of the opinion that smoking is unhealthful and it's bad for you, and you'd probably be better off if you didn't do it. I quit. I don't tell people to quit smoking. I don't care whether you smoke or not. I don't care whether smoking kills you or not. It's not my business. But don't call yourself a victim if you come down with lung cancer or you get some kind of a disease or something goes haywire. You're the proximate cause of your own injury here, partner. You can choose to smoke or not smoke. I chose to smoke, and I never had a bad cigar. I tell people, you know, well, what were you thinking of when you were smoking? I was thinking of how pleasurable this smoking is. I never smoked a bad cigar. I enjoyed every puff. I thought it was the greatest thing since sliced white bread. But the experts told me back in 1962, I believe it was, in Reader's Digest, that smoking causes lung cancer. I believed them, and I quit smoking. Now, it may be that smoking causes lung cancer, or it may be that it doesn't. I don't begrudge the do-gooders in this case. I quit smoking. I'm not sure that smoking causes lung cancer. I'm not sure that it doesn't. I'm just not sure that it does. And then this guy points this out, and he says, it may be. But if it is, it isn't because somebody did some survey or did some test or did some scientific experiment and proved it, because they didn't do that. They said they did, but they didn't. And that's the gist of this whole argument over here. The experts come to us and they say, well, we conducted these tests, and we can speak with authority, and this is the way this works. And we believe them because they're experts. But that isn't necessarily true. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. And listen to this. It appears to me that people who were smokers and couldn't quit told me that I must have not been addicted. Well, it appears to me, therefore, that the anti-smoking advocates think that at first children are hooked by advertising, and then when they grow up and become sensible adults, they can't give up the habit because they're psychologically addicted. Now, one question that the anti-smoking advocates have never sought to answer is, does the emphasis on cigarettes being addictive prevent people who would want to stop smoking, does it prevent them from stopping? Because they believe that it's psychological. Well, I think that smoking is, in fact, addictive. When I quit smoking, I quit cold turkey. I just quit. And I noticed that for about 3 days, I really wanted to smoke. I think mainly because it was a habit. You know, when I finished eating, I always lit up. And now when I finished eating, I couldn't light up. So now what am I going to do with my hands? And I think it is addictive. At least it was in my case. And I had to break the addiction. But after 3 days, I said to myself, well, if I can quit for 3 days, I can quit forever. I don't have to smoke. I have never smoked from that day to this. You know, say for walking in the bar and taking a little secondhand smoke in from the patrons. I personally don't smoke and never have. Well, since I quit. Now, other people, they don't. They go back to smoking. They can quit for a month, 2 months, 6 months, and then they go back to it. I'm not quite sure why they do that. And I think it's because they want to smoke. I'm not sure that they're addicted. After 6 months, you know, the addiction should be taken care of, shouldn't it? Now, whenever people worry about the effects advertising has on children, I'm reminded of the letter a young person wrote to the New York Times. He said, quote, we make our choices even though we know the risks. It's good to remember that Winston Churchill once said this. He said, when I get the facts, I twist those facts to fit my position. So Winston Churchill was simply telling us what the experts do, but he was disarmingly honest about it. Now, having said that, let's look at what's happening in the tobacco industry. Now, you know, that's pretty much the way people react and behave. In other words, when we get information that's uncomfortable, you know, I can come on the air and I can say, did you know Jesus wasn't born on December 25th? And that Christmas is prohibited in the scripture, and Jeremiah 10 verses 1 through 6 tells us not to practice Christmas. And most people, they hear that, they hear those words, and they say, well, I don't believe it. Well, I'm not here to get you to believe it. I don't care whether you do or not. Somebody needed to tell you that fact, and I just did. Now, God says he hates our feasts. He says that in Isaiah 1 verse 14. He says, I hate your feasts. Your Christmas, your Easter, your New Year's, your Valentine's Day, and so on. I hate your feast. And we, you know, we can say the same thing to God. Well, we hate your feasts too. We hate your Passover, and we despise your Feast of Tabernacles, your Feast of Weeks, and your Day of Atonement. Makes us want to puke. All right, so we're at loggerheads with our Creator. I thought I ought to tell you that. It isn't that it's going to change your view. Because once you have the facts, you will twist the facts to fit your position. And so what you may do now, instead of coming out and saying, well, Jesus was born on December the 25th, you may alter that. Well, we all know that Jesus wasn't born on December the 25th, but we don't know exactly when he was born, and so we need to observe his birthday, so we just selected December the 25th. And if that makes you feel good, you know, get after it. But that isn't true either. December 25th was not picked because we needed a date. Now, why not March 10th or July 9th? December 25th has far more significance in the birth of the sun. It's sun worship that you're involved in here. You're not practicing the birthday of Jesus. You're practicing the birthday of the sun. The sun is regenerating in the winter solstice. That's the purpose for December 25th. Now, you may not have known that, but it doesn't make any difference because you don't care anyway. And you're going to continue on. That's what Winston Churchill pointed out here. He said it's good to remember what Winston Churchill said. He says, when I get the facts, I twist those facts to fit my position. That's what we all do. That's what the experts do. It's dishonest and it's unethical. And it ultimately leads you down the wrong rabbit trail. That's the bottom line, wrong rabbit trail. But that's what we want to do. Now, whenever people worry about the effects that advertising has on children, you know, public health advocates claim that the industry tricks young people to smoke through targeted marketing, advertising, and promotion. And then once manipulated, especially when they're not of an age to know any better, into smoking, they are psychologically hooked. But methods of manipulation can be artfully unfair, insidious, and omnivorous. Consider the phenomenon called environmental tobacco smoke. This is where you go into the bar. See, they've got this environmental tobacco smoke now. And they're closing down smoking in Springfield, you know, just up the road here, a piece from where I live. They've banned it in all the restaurants. Now they're talking about banning it in all the bars. Well, hell, the only people that smoke in the bar are the drinkers. You know, Baptists who don't smoke don't drink. The people that drink smoke. So when you come in here, this is a backdoor methodology down here in the Bible Belt to shut down all of the drinking in the bars. If we can shut down smoking in the bars, then the patrons that go to the bars to drink won't go to the bars to drink. Doesn't mean they're going to quit drinking. They're just going to quit going to the bars. You know, if I went into a bar and I couldn't smoke, I wouldn't go in. Now, I don't smoke, and I'm tickled to death that the smokers are banned from the bars, but then I don't go into the bar to drink anyway. You know, so what a conundrum that turns out to be. Well, we'll take it up right there next time because I'm running out of time here. Let me give you a final reminder, and we'll take this up next time, talking about the paid professionals. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and that's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.